Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is Scott, the producer. It looks like we're having trouble with Rebecca and Joe's mic again. We do have our special guest, Madeline Black, on the line. We are going to go to a quick song and have Joe and Rebecca call back in. And we'll be going in just a couple of seconds here. Actually, I'll give them 1 second to call in. But welcome to Voices for Change 2.0. Give me 1 second, and we'll see if we can get Joe and Rebecca back on the line here. Every once in a while, their microphone goes out for some reason. I think it's a Blog Talk Radio thing. But we have a great guest today with Madeline Black calling it all the way from Glasgow. And let's see if we have Joe and Rebecca back on the line. Joe, Rebecca,
can you hear us?
Can you hear me?
Yay,
yep, we can hear you.
We're back.
Yay.
All right, well, we're not going to go to song, guys. Welcome, Joe and Rebecca. Here we go, guys. You're live on the air.
Hooray.
Right. Thank you so much, Scott.
Thanks, Scott. Sorry about that, everybody.
Yeah, we're not quite sure what it is about our setup that does that. That was the second or third time that's happened to us.
Yeah, at least. So we apologize for the technical glitches. I don't have a good excuse, so I'm not going to make one. Yeah. So anyway, thanks very much for being with us this morning. Thanks for taking time out of your busy day to listen to our humble little show on this wonderful Saturday in April 2018.
Cold,
sunny, but cold here in Detroit anyway. Babe?
So today we have an inspirational guest on the show with us. She has shown all of us what a survivor truly is. And she's a best-selling author, speaker, and an advocate. So we're really excited to welcome Madeline Black to the show.
Hi there.
Hello.
Good morning for us. Good afternoon for you.
Yes, afternoon for me.
Yep, calling us all the way from beautiful Scotland.
Yep.
It's very exciting for us and someplace that we would someday love to visit.
That's for sure.
Yeah. So, how's it going?
It's going good, thank you. It's a wet and cold day here, but apart from that, it's all going good.
Do you have any questions for us before we jump right in?
No, I'm just very happy to go with the flow.
Okay, sounds
Yay.
Good.
Well, we're happy that you took time out of your day to be with us today, Madeline, and we're honored. So thank you very, very much.
You're very welcome.
All right, so we're just going to get started.
Yeah.
Very early on in your life, you had to survive a horrific trauma. For those that don't know your story, would you please tell us about it?
Sure. My story starts in the late 1970s, and I was gang raped by two young American teenagers when I was just 13 years old.
Mm-hmm. That's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. We're so sorry about that, just in a lot of ways. How did that impact your how do I want to put it? Like going forward, how did you begin to pick up the pieces after that?
Well, I didn't really go forward for a long time. It affected me in so many ways. And to start with, I couldn't speak about it. But, you know, what we don't speak about, it leaks out of us. And it leaked out of me in many ways. And when I look back now, I realize I was just trying to numb out. So, you know, I became, I used drugs, I used alcohol, I became very promiscuous, I attempted suicide, I had an eating disorder, I spent a few months in a children's psychiatric ward, my opinion of myself was so low, I had fears, phobias, I hated myself, I was scared of the world I lived in. So yeah, it had a huge impact on my life.
Wow, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was actually my next question was, did that incident cause you to seek mental health care? Do you still seek mental health care today?
I'm really, really in a good place today, but the mental health care I received was when I attempted suicide, so I was nearly 14, but that I didn't seek that help. It was put upon me, obviously, because of the situation, and I wasn't a very willing patient. I was then at a stage where I couldn't or wouldn't speak about what had happened. And I think, to be honest, my mind had actually shut it off so much I didn't actually remember what had happened. It took me many, many years to really get all my memories back. It took a long time.
Wow. How was your family?
Yeah, did you have support from your family?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't tell my parents for about 3 years, and even then I couldn't actually tell them. So what I did was that I wrote a note and I left it on my pillow when I was about 16, so about 3 years later, and I went to school and they came back and they asked me about this, but there was another girl involved and she said that they were nice boys and they wouldn't behave like that. They were sons of diplomats living in London for a couple of years. So it had taken me all these years to find my voice, but in that moment I just felt betrayed and I felt like they didn't believe me, which wasn't the case, but in my screwed up 16-year-old head, that's what I thought, that I wasn't believed. So that just sent me deeper into a downward spiral.
That's terrible. Yeah. I am so sorry that you went through such a terrible experience, you know.
Well, sadly, I know, since I've shared my story, and as we've seen with the Me Too movement, my story is just the story of so many people.
Yeah.
Yeah,
sure. It really is.
Excuse
me. What do you do to get through the hard times, you know, if things get difficult?
Well, one of the things I think that really helped me was I reversed my thinking, and I don't really know where it came in from, but when I first met my husband, I went away to Israel for a year. My parents thought it would be a good idea to get away from all the bad influences that I was under, people that were taking drugs and whatever, and I met my husband, Stephen, about 35 years ago, and I always told him when I first met him that I wouldn't have children, and he was fine, but every now and again he would ask me the question again. And I remember the exact moment that we were away on a beach in Thailand and he asked me the question again. And I was all ready for my usual answer of, you know, I can't do that. But something came in and made me change my mind. And I thought, you know, if I never become a mum, I now have three daughters, then these two young men would have won. They would have, they'd still be having power and control over my life. And I didn't want them to do that. So it was then that I came up with my plan that I called my best revenge, which would just be to live my life as well as I could. And I just refused to be identified from that point to by what had happened to me. And I thought that was it. I thought I had healed. But it's, trauma
right.
has a way of coming back later on. When we think we're done, it kind of, you know, comes back up again to greet us.
Yeah, it has a tendency of rearing its ugly head when you least
it
expect
does.
It. You know.
Yeah.
But
the
that
symptoms of PTSD are debilitating. So, you know, you're always probably going to have a little bit of that in your life, I would think.
I would say, actually, to be honest, I really don't have any PTSD anymore. I worked so hard. I mean, where I'm at right now, and it sounds, you know, maybe difficult for people that are going right through it right now, but it's been a process. You know, it's taken me many, many years and many different types of therapies. But really now I went out of my way to challenge all my fears and my phobias once I saw them. And I really would say that I'm really, really okay.
Well, that's good. That's good to hear.
Yeah, that is really good to hear. There's something I wanted to ask.
Sorry, Ben.
No, it's all right. No, you're fine. It sounds like it was just a transformational thought for you when you decided you changed your mind and have children.
Mm-hmm.
Once you did that start having a snowball effect on how you viewed the rest of the world around you?
Yes and no. I could see that if I wasn't careful that I would then project all my fear onto my children. And then I thought, what would be the point of having children and then making them
right.
filled with fear? So then I really had to work my fear. I saw that most of my fears were around men and my safety. I was paranoid about my safety. You know, I couldn't even take my rubbish bin down to the end of the garden if it was dark, or I'd get in my car and I'd put the locks down. I wouldn't take a taxi anywhere. Every single thing that I did, I had to, you know, think about it in my head, had to plan how to get somewhere. So I started to challenge my fears, and I realized that my fears, they weren't really real. Everything was based on what had happened to me, and it was based on what could happen to me. So none of it was going on right now. It was just my imagination. But again, like I said before, that's taken me a lot to work that out, a lot of processing and different therapies to get to where I'm at.
Wow. Is there any one particular therapy or method that was especially beneficial for you?
Well, there's been quite a few, actually. One of the main ones has been to find my voice, to say it in its entirety, what had happened. And obviously, I've written my book now, so I've put it all down in print. But to be listened to and to be heard and to be believed, I don't think there's anything more powerful than that. And it was when I was having therapy, my therapist also suggested going for body therapy, like therapeutic massage. And the very first time I went, I could hear this person shouting and screaming and crying. And I thought, oh, my gosh. And then I realized it was coming from me. So, you know, all our trauma gets caught in our body, in our cells. And I think we really need to find whatever way it works for you. We need to find a way to shift it. And it might not just be only with words. It might not just be talking therapies. You know, there's many different types of therapies out there.
You know, and what you're saying about, finding your voice, you know, I had sort of, rape is a very powerful word, I guess you could say. And even when I was writing the questions for this show, I had trouble because I didn't want to say the word, you know, and I
couldn't
think
say it for years.
The,
I can say it now.
Yeah. You mentioned your book. Your book is called Unbroken.
It's a year old now.
Would you please share your book with us? Tell us about it.
Sure. Well, it really follows my journey of from that night, and I was actually raped 3 more times before I was 18, and it follows my journey of survival, healing, forgiveness, transformation, and hope. And I wrote it with the intention that it would give other people a voice because, you know, I know it was the courage of someone else speaking out that helped me to find my voice, and I really want to pay that forward. And I was very particular about putting all the details into my book because there was a lot of arguments about it before. I wasn't really into writing everything down. And then I saw that if I didn't write everything down, then I would be sanitizing it and I would be making it prettier so that people wouldn't be uncomfortable. Like, you know, we even struggled to say the word rape. And I thought, well, if I don't write it all down, then I'm just covering it up. I'm sanitizing it. And I wanted it to be there for exactly how it was.
Sorry.
Sorry about that. I had to cough.
Yeah,
so I know
it is
tough to read in parts, but it does end well.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah, you know, and that's the one thing that you always hear about is when a person goes through something like this, you know, you have to speak out and you have to keep speaking out until you're heard. And I think it's wonderful that you finally, you know, that you did this, that you. You know, you didn't just collapse.
Right.
You know,
I did for a while. But afterwards, I fought back.
Sure.
You have to collapse because the trauma is just biology. It takes over.
Right. But, I mean, eventually you came out of that and you were, you know, you said your truth until you finally had that one person look at you and say, I believe you, you know, and that's got to just be, you know, a weight off your shoulders once you're actually told that.
You know, it was really when my eldest daughter turned 13 that all the memories came back and all the flashbacks and the nightmares and the feelings and the thoughts, and my PTSD then was really heightened. And I thought, well, if it was so bad, surely I would remember it. But now I know it's because it was so bad. That's why I couldn't remember it, because now I work as a psychotherapist. But it was, you know, the memories, I went back to counseling to try to take them away, and I realized I couldn't take them away. And I went back for about 3 years, and I'd already had counseling beforehand. And I really, it wasn't so much the memories that were disturbing me, it was what I was doing with them. I just didn't want to believe it. I couldn't believe that had happened, and I refused to believe it. But the more I denied it, the more the memories would come in. So I really had to find a way to accept all that had done to me. And, you know, I had to realize, well, I am still alive. You know, they tried to, but they didn't kill me. I am still here. I've led my life as well as I could. I do believe that life is for living. And I thought, you know, actually, I'm not my body. I'm not the things that are done to me. And the true essence of me, whatever you want to call it, they could never harm that. That always remains untouched.
Mm. Yeah. Agreed. Mm. You know, and that's a powerful conclusion to come to in life, you know, is, you know, they can do all this stuff to me, but I'm still going to overcome it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm still going to thrive. And that's the biggest
hurdle.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, it's a big F you to your attackers that, you know, you tried to put me through this and I have overcome what you've done to me. You know, and, you know, I think, you know, getting back to your book, you know, you state that, you know, you didn't want to sanitize it, that you wanted to put, you know, your truth out there. And it's real and it's raw and it's honest, you know, doing that. You know, Beck did the same thing with hers, you know, and you find that when you can be completely honest about what you've been through and you don't sanitize it, you know, the amount of people that will come forward and say, I went through the same thing.
Absolutely.
You know, and
every day I get messages from survivors that have been on my website or read my book or Facebook page. Every day somebody will share their story with me since I've gone public.
Yeah.
So I know
and that's
so many people out there.
Yeah, it's powerful. You know, when you've got that type of thing, you know, you're making that kind of impact on people's lives. You know, that is a powerful statement, you know, and it helps people, excuse me, it helps people realize that, you know, there's more of us than there are of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
Well, Marina, who is the founder of the Forgiveness Project, which is where I first shared my story, she often refers to us as story healers rather than story tellers, and she believes in the sharing of our narratives, our stories, and what it can do for other people. And that's really now why I share my story. It's not what it can do for me anymore. It's what it can do for other people.
I really like that.
Yeah.
Story healers.
Yeah.
That's a nice term, you know. And,
it's
and
lovely,
I think
isn't
it's
it?
Very true. It is. It really is. You know, that's a powerful thing, you know, knowing, you know, and having the courage too to come forward and tell your story in the hopes that, you know, it's not only going to heal you, but it's going to heal others as well.
Yeah.
You know, that's, I think, the essence of, you know, part of why we're here is, you know, to show people that, you know, you're here for me, I'm here for you. You know, we're all in this together. And that's the one thing that really kills me in society today in general, is there's so much, you know, us versus them, me versus you. And, you know, really it's, you know, we have to realize that we need to all come together. You know.
And we have to realize, actually, we've got more in common than we have in what divides us.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You know.
Just for those of our listeners, can you tell us where they can pick your book up?
Sure. Well, you can get it online on Amazon. In the UK, you can get it in bookstores. I think hopefully you can get it in America in bookstores as well. But, or via my website, you can contact me. If you want a signed copy, I'm very happy to send it out via PayPal. So lots of places.
Okay.
That's good.
Perfect.
Yeah. Madeline, what do you think the biggest misconceptions are about sexual assault?
Well, there's so many. So many. We live in such society of rape culture. There's so much victim blaming going on. You know, even then in the late 1970s, as a 13-year-old, I was worried it was my fault. I felt guilty. I had been drinking. I lied about where I was staying. You know, I thought I would get into trouble because of the messages then, even as a young teenager, that were fed to me. And if we look at the way women are objectified, the music, the programs, I mean, we don't really want to speak about your president, but, you know, how seriously do America really take sexual assault if somebody can grab him by the pussy just because he's famous? You know, look at the society we live in, and then we've had so many cases here where it seems that the men are guilty, and then you wonder who's on trial in the court. Our court systems are so bad. I live in Scotland. And out of the cases that make it to court, it's only something like 4 or 5% will end in conviction. So you wonder why women or men would bother reporting if that's going to be the outcome, because it's a really horrible ordeal to be a witness in a rape trial if, you know, you are up against the accused. So many changes need to happen.
Yeah, it's bad over here, too, and, you know, by all means, I don't blame you for bringing up our embarrassment of a president. It's a touchy subject for me. I could spend an hour just railing against that guy.
We're not going to let him.
Yeah, she won't let me. So,
good.
But you
do wonder how seriously do they take it if that's who you have, you know, voted in.
That's the problem. And there's... It's a whole topic of conversation trying to make sense of how he got in the first place, and, you know, versus what, you know, our previous president. And that's just a whole other conversation entirely. But I agree that things definitely need to change. I mean, you know, over here, I don't know if you guys have this in Scotland, but, you know, stuff like, like in Detroit alone, there are, you know, hundreds or thousands of unprocessed rape kits that go back a couple decades, you know, and that just speaks to how slow the courts are on this, how slow everything gets handled, and it needs to change.
Yes, absolutely. I think the cases should be fast-tracked. I mean, here you could wait 2 or 3 years. And somebody told me in India somebody's waiting 10 years for a court trial, and you think they could fast-track it. They could do it in 3-4 months, easy. Mm. And I don't know whether juries should be present. We have the jury system, or whether they need to be trained, or the judges need to be trained, because, you know, women are told, well, make sure you cry, make sure you wear this. So they're always looking for the perfect victim, you know, how you appear. Mm-hmm. And there's no perfect victim. Anyone can be a victim of rape or sexual assault.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and there's a whole other way I was going to go with this, but
we're going to do that on the other side.
We're going to do that on the other side, because it's time for our first break. So we're going to take a few minutes here. This is going to be It Gets Better from Blake McIver, and we will see you on the other side.
Strong. They put that loaded metal in your head. can help you understand. Yeah, I know you're hurting, I can feel your pain, but you've got a future.
Welcome back to Voice for Change 2.0. We're so glad to have you with us today.
Yes, indeed. And if you're just joining us, we are talking to Miss Madeleine Black from Glasgow, Scotland. Thank you so much for being with us today.
You should never try and do
it. You're welcome.
When talking to somebody with an accent.
I was trying not to. I promise you, I really wasn't, because my Scottish accent is not anywhere near what it used to be.
And I'm actually English anyway, so it's fine.
I had a feeling. I had it, because it's not that, you know, I'm not going to do the Mike Myers
thing. You can understand me.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to say it. But that's cool. So,
well, jumping right back into our questions.
Moving right along.
Stop. So what would you say to anyone that might be struggling after an assault currently?
I would say whenever it happened, you know, whether it's recent or whether it's decades ago, because some people will never find their voice, that it's never too late to go and get help, to speak to someone, to share your story, to be heard, to be listened to. It takes such a huge step. For me, it was the shame. I put myself in a prison of silence for years, and it took me 35 years to share my story publicly. I can't explain what shame does. It's just such a destructive emotion. You know, I just used to believe that people, if they found out that somehow it was a reflection of me, that they would feel about me how I felt about myself, and that was that I was worthless, that I was dirty, that I was contaminated, and I did everything to avoid people finding out. So it's kind of ironic that now I speak about it all the time. But yeah, the shame is so hard to work through. But I realize now that I never had anything to be ashamed about. The shame never belonged to me. I carried inappropriate shame for years. You know, it wasn't something I invited in. It was something that was done to me at a young age. And I would say the shame doesn't belong to you. The shame always belongs to the perpetrators, and the silence only hurts us.
Yeah,
definitely. That is solid. That's, yeah, you know, and that's the thing, is it's not, you know, it wasn't your fault. It wasn't anything that you said or did or anything. It was the actions of these other people impacting your life, you know, and it's tragic when, you know, people have to carry this shame with them wherever they go, you know?
Yeah.
You know, it's awesome that you're able to work through that. and speak out now.
Definitely.
You know, and that you found
your
voice.
Well, I kind of call myself an accidental activist or an accidental speaker. It wasn't ever really in my plan, but it was since I shared my story nearly 4 years ago, I was just invited to speak, and I realized actually, somehow, I don't know why, I don't get nervous, and I really am okay about speaking, and I think even if it just helps one person in the audience, then that's fine. Then that's my job done. So I will just, if people invite me, I will just speak, because you never know who's listening or where the ripples go to.
Exactly. Exactly. I personally have to wonder what kind of impact your speaking out might have had on this is kind of a delicate question, I guess, but mm-hmm. what kind of impact it would have on your attackers?
I don't know. I don't have anything to do with them. I don't know where they are. So I have no idea. No idea.
It kind of makes me wonder, you know, how, you know, do they, now this is all speculative, you know, it's mm-hmm. all what if stuff, and
yeah, and
know.
I don't fill my head with that anymore because I can't worry
yeah.
about them. That's not my journey now. But you know, something happened to me when I was having therapy, which I never ever intended to do. My therapist suggested to me that maybe these two young men weren't born rapists, and at first, you know, I was completely outraged. I thought, how dare he say that to me? I was so angry. I was so bitter and sarcastic. I was horrible most of the time. But then, you know, he planted this seed in my head, and I really started to think, the seed started to grow. I wanted to wonder, understand, how did they know how to behave so violently towards another human being? And I thought about what had they seen or heard or experienced, and I really started to take that into my heart, and I did start to feel forgiveness, or I felt compassion towards them, because I thought, I have to live with what's done to me. They're going to have to live with what they did to another human being. And
yeah.
I saw that when they were dehumanizing me, are they not really dehumanizing themselves? You know, when they were not connected in, and I do believe we all come into the world the same way, and they had been conditioned by life, whatever had happened to them. Could never forgive the act of rape. That's not what I'm saying. But I learned to find
right.
a place or a way to forgive them and to really accept it and to let it go. And then actually once I did that, it was much easier. There was no more hate or anger or revenge in my heart, because I would fantasize about somebody kidnapping them and taking them to an empty flat, tying them up and beating them up and raping them for 4 or 5 hours, just like they had done to me. But I thought, well, they would have no idea that I'm full of hate. Who is it going to hurt? It's only going to hurt me. And I really had
right.
to
right.
find a way to just let it go, because it was destructive. It's such a horrible emotion, hate, to hold on to. It touches everything in your life.
Plus, you have to find a way to forgive yourself, even though you're not at fault.
Oh, yeah. It
There's
was
still
forgiveness
a part of you
of myself
that
I started with.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, Rebecca. You know, and I felt so guilty for years, and I realized, you know, as I said, I didn't have anything to be guilty about. And forgiveness for me is about self-love as well, and it's about understanding that we, you know, we're all born babies. I've never once met an evil baby. We're all born the same way that we come into the world, and we get conditioned by our experiences.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a really, really good thing I was going to say. Boy, I'm telling
Sorry,
you,
I answered very long questions.
No. You say something and it gets a spark going, and then it's like,
good.
Oh, but you're older now and you don't remember things that you thought a minute ago. And that's
I have
the
senior
trap
moments as well.
It.
It's okay.
Oh my God. Is this, you know, people make cracks about senior moments, but I'm telling you what, this is a real thing, people. So, you know, but I guess the one thing where I was going with what I was saying earlier about your attackers is I'm kind of hoping that by you speaking out and others speaking out, that maybe it gives the attackers, I don't want to say it gives them pause, but it makes them kind of stop and realize, oh my God, what have I done? you know,
yeah, well,
and maybe
even not in my situation, maybe with the Me Too movement, maybe some men will now question their actions. Well, maybe was that rape? Did I get consent? It's really good that we've raised the consciousness and men will start to think about their actions. Or if they're in a work situation and the woman, you know, is being ridiculed and being joked at or being sexually harassed, maybe now they will step in and it won't be acceptable anymore. So it's great that the awareness, the consciousness has been raised.
Yeah, we were going to actually ask you about how you felt about the Me Too movement.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Most men I speak to are so surprised, and most women I speak to are not surprised at all. We know the fear of walking down the street looking over our shoulder, looking at a man. Isn't he going to attack me? Am I safe? Am I not? You know, it's something we feel all the time. We always suss out situations. Is this okay? Is this not? But men seem to have been surprised by the outpouring. But I think it is fantastic that it's given so many women a voice. You know, I think within the first hour on Twitter, the hashtag MeToo, it was millions of women who retweeted it in the first hour, something like 24 million. It was outrageous, huge, big number. And you think, well, how many are still quiet? How many still haven't found their voice? How many still can't speak about what happened? So it's great, you know, because it was the courage of somebody else speaking out that helped me find my voice. I was talking to a woman online who's also a story with the Forgiveness Project, and she was going to prison as part of a restorative justice meeting to meet the serial rapist who had raped her, which I just thought she was a warrior. I thought it was amazing. And Marina asked to share my story, and she said, you know, you don't need to put your picture, you don't need to put your name. And I just thought, well, if she can do that, then I've got nothing to be ashamed about anymore. I'm fed up of hiding and pretending, you know, I didn't want to hide anymore. So to find my voice has been the single most powerful thing. And I think the hashtag MeToo is helping other women and men to find their voice too.
I agree, you know, and I have to say, as a man, I'm not so much surprised by the outpouring or anything. I'm more, I think, yeah, I'm not, I guess, how do I want to say it? I'm not shocked. You know, unfortunately, I hate to say that, but I'm kind of surprised it didn't happen sooner. You know, all these people speaking out and coming forward and saying that, that it happened to them as well. You know, it breaks my heart. You know, I guess the. Yeah, you know, I don't want to even say that the number, like you mentioned, was like 24 million or something that had, you know, retweeted the hashtag.
That must be millions now. I don't even know how many.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, you know, and it's like it's sad how prevalent and far-reaching it is, you know, and you know, the thing that makes a man stop and think is, well, you know, this is somebody's mother, this is somebody's sister, somebody's daughter.
Absolutely.
You know, I guess the one difficult thing for men is, you know, I think going forward, the men might be a little more gun shy when it comes to, you know, saying or you know, approaching a woman. You know,
that's fine.
You know,
that I don't have any problem with that at all. I mean, I think they ought to be more respectful when approaching women.
And I agree. You know, I agree. You know, they're and that's the biggest takeaway from this is, you know, there can start being some healing and respect in the whole thing, you know, versus
I think if you're a decent, normal guy, you've got nothing to worry about. It's the men that I hear that are saying that Me Too is just an excuse for women to start blaming things when they didn't want sex or whatever. No, that's not right. It's about giving people a voice and letting them share their stories. If you've got nothing to worry about, you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and you know, on us as men, you know, it behooves us to really, truly understand and take to heart that no means no, you know,
absolutely.
And, you know, sorry, guys, you're not God's gift to women. You know, if you approach somebody and they say no, let it go. You know what I mean?
Hopefully out of all of this, We will learn about respect, we'll learn about consent, about healthy relationships, and maybe for my children or their children, this will be a thing of the past. You know, it would be so normal to say, well, did you get consent? You know, did she say yes or did he say yes? I saw a report about Iceland, actually. Now they've stopped asking the woman, what did you do? They're asking the men, well, did she say yes? And I think, well, that is how it starts, because so much of it is put on, you know, what were you wearing? What were you drinking? What were you doing out late? They put all the blame on women, or they say to women, well, don't go out, it's late, it's dark, and we have to keep ourselves safe. Well, no, surely we need to teach people how not to rape.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's the thing is, you know, in this day and age, you know, this is kind of the nth degree, but a woman walking down the street naked shouldn't have to worry about somebody assaulting her. You know, it shouldn't be the issue that it is. You know, it shouldn't have to be, women being afraid to go out at night to, you know, even something as simple as putting your trash out. You know, like you were saying, you know, how afraid you were. That shouldn't be an issue. That shouldn't. And it's on us. It's on us as men to change our way of thinking, you know.
Absolutely. It's on all of us. It's not just a woman's issue or a man's issue. It's a human race issue.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. What do you think needs to be done going forward to combat stigma?
Oh, we need to challenge it wherever we see it. We need to just let people know it's not appropriate. I really hope now with Me Too that it's great that it's been used on social media, you know, and it's really raised awareness, but somehow we need to find a way to take it off social media and put something into action. Quite what that is, I don't know yet, but we need to find a way to keep it going. It's not just about social media. It's got to be implemented into businesses, into society, into schools, into colleges, everywhere, to have a zero tolerance policy.
Yeah, I think the social media thing is a good start. I think it's it's helping to raise awareness. I think now maybe we need to start looking at policy.
Yeah. That's the battle that we're fighting with mental illness as well, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, it started in Hollywood with all the 50-plus women coming forward about Harvey Weinstein, but obviously then it escalated that actually it's in all professions. It's not just, you know, exclusive to Hollywood. Most women I know have been spoken to inappropriately, been leered at, been groped, been flashed at, you know. I really don't know any woman that hasn't. And then I know women that have been raped and abused as well. So that's from the whole spectrum of inappropriate behavior. I don't think I know any woman that hasn't been affected in some way.
Yeah.
I have issues in my life going all the way back to high school. So, you know, when you're talking about making yourself feel secure or safe, you know, it's a constant struggle. We just went to the movies the other night, and it was a later movie, and we were walking out, and we were just about the only people in the theater and in the parking lot. And at two different times, there was one man walking behind us. And the entire time, I'm just willing my feet to keep going because I'm terrified of what this guy is going to do. And he eventually turned off and went to his own car, which wasn't anywhere near ours. But I had to use the restroom, but I said, forget it, we'll just go home, because I didn't want to stop and give this guy an excuse to do something if he was going to.
Yeah, and she's saying this, and she felt this way with me being right next to her, knowing that I would give my life to protect her. But, you know, it's still just the fact that my wife, after all these years, still has these kind of fears, you know. It really, as a man, it kind of opens up my eyes to see how insidious this whole culture
it's
has
hard
really become
because
with
it's, it. A lot of it stems from our own personal experiences, but a lot of it stems from the messages that we give society. You know, you're not safe if there's somebody following you. And the guy could just be going to his car, but it's what we do with something, isn't it? It's what we then do with it in our mind and how we can grow it out of proportion or how we can calm ourselves down. It's always about, I always think it's not what happens to us that is important, it's what we do with it.
Yeah, you know, perception is reality,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we are going to go and take our last break. We'll see you on the other side of this song, which is Beautiful by David Hernandez.
Father in the sky, and they started to align. I see you passing by, and we're slowing down the tide. Now my love is flashing by, all I see is flashing lights. Cause you're right here by my side, can you feel it come alive? If this were a love song, would you be mine? Cause I just can't get you off of my mind. And I think about you all day and night. So I wrote you a love song, wrote you a love song. Baby, you're beautiful. I think you're beautiful.
Welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. I am Joe. This is Rebecca sitting next to me.
Hello.
Hello. And on the line, we have Miss Madeline Black. Hello,
Hi.
Lovely lady. How are you?
I'm doing good, thank you.
It's good. Boy, that song is a peppy tune, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a peppy song. Peppier than I am.
So, what have you learned about yourself having survived such horrible experience?
Well, I have really learnt that I am so much stronger than I thought I ever was. In fact, we all are stronger than we think we are. And I'm very lucky that I had a good teacher in both of my parents, but my dad especially, he was a Holocaust survivor whose both his parents, his brothers and sisters, his youngest brother, Mordechai, was only 6. They were all gassed in Auschwitz. So he was a widow when my mum met him. And it wasn't so much by what he said, but it was by how he lived his life that he showed me that life was for living, and he really enjoyed his life. And I used to think, well, if my dad can get past all of that, surely I can get past one night. You know, there must be a way. And my mom as well, she had a neck and back injury and was bedridden for a couple of years, and then she went on to heal herself. And both of them have amazing resilience, and they thrived. So, yeah, I think we all are so much stronger than we think we are when it really comes down to it.
Wow, that's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Would you take a minute and tell us about your TED Talk?
I haven't done a TED Talk, but that's very nice of you to imagine that I have. I have a video that can see. Yeah. There's a video that was made actually by a woman, a filmmaker that I know, Kathleen Little, and it's called Stronger. So it kind of fits in there. And it's just, it's actually on my website, which you can view. It's on madeleineblack.co.uk, and it's about 16 minutes long. So it's like a TED Talk kind of length, and it's just really about my story. So yeah, I just really share my story with it.
Yeah, that's on me. I could have sworn, I know you've been posting a lot of pictures lately of different shows that you've been on and everything.
Yeah.
And I know that I just saw like the beginning of a clip, and I assumed it was a TED Talk. So that's my fault.
Yeah.
My bad.
No, that's okay. And there was a few, there was an event recently when I was given an award, and actually I won the category of strength. So something about strength seems to be a kind of a theme for me. And they did
yeah.
a little video that went with the event. So it might have been that one you saw.
Yeah, well, you definitely have strength in spades, I'll tell you that
mm-hmm,
much.
For sure.
Wow. If Madeline, if people want to reach out to you on social media, how can they find you?
Sure, I'm all over the place. So there is my website, madeleineblack.co.uk, or on Twitter, I'm madblack65, the same on Instagram, or I have a public Facebook page as well, which is Madeleine Black Unbroken. Or on LinkedIn. So I am all over the place.
Oh, you are.
And I
all
do
over the
always
place.
Reply to messages, yeah. It might take a while, but I always reply to messages. So please do send me a message if you want to.
That's awesome.
Yeah, would you mind spelling your first name so folks know
sure.
how to find you?
It's like the French way. So it's MadeleineE.
Okay, perfect.
Very cool.
Madeleine Black.
Very, very
Black
cool.
is in the color.
Yes.
Well, that was the easy part.
Yeah, we had that one. We had that figured.
So what is next for you going forward?
You know, I don't really know. All of what's happened to me, I've never really planned. I just really kind of learned to just trust life. And when I do one event, there's often somebody there that says, could you come here? Could you go there? So when I've spoken in schools or book festivals or conferences, I've never really planned to, which is why I kind of call myself this accidental activist or accidental speaker. It just kind of comes in. So I'm just very happy just to wait and see what the next thing is that comes in to me.
That's very cool. What if you had to pick something that you would want to do, something new,
mm-hmm.
what would that be?
Well, it wouldn't be something new, but I have spoken in a few schools, and I really do like speaking with young people. They are so receptive, despite the teacher's fears that what I will tell them could traumatize them. And they're just great, and I think if we can start educating even at a younger age, not necessarily to hear my story, but to talk about consent and relationships and healthy attitudes, it's going to make such a difference to people coming into this world.
Yeah, I agree.
That's
you know,
my theory on mental illness as well.
Yeah.
That we need to start with them young.
Yeah.
Before they, you know, start developing their.
Absolutely. To recognize the signs. And if they do have any
mm-hmm.
mental health issues, to realize it's okay. It's okay not to be okay yet, but you can get past it and you can get help as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. People don't realize exactly how resilient children really are, you know, or they forget
yeah.
how resilient they were when they were kids. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, beyond the going out and riding bikes without helmets thing.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was invited to speak at one of the first schools I went to, and the day before it was a friend of mine who was a teacher. She said, we've had a thought. We don't want you to talk about the rape details at all. We don't think they should know. Just talk about the forgiveness part. And I said, but if I don't tell them about the rape, how will they know what I had to forgive? And then said, okay, that's fine. And I said, actually, statistically, out of these 120 kids, some of them already have been abused or raped, or it's going on right now. You can't be so naive to think that they haven't experienced it already.
Yeah. And that's very true, you know, and yeah. People don't consider that, you know, they, you know, you hear on the news, you know, this child was sexually assaulted by, you know, this person or this relative or whatever. And, mm-hmm. you know, they'll mention the age of the child and it's, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh my God,
sometimes.
And younger sometimes. And it's devastating. And we think that's horrific to hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then when you actually stop and think about how many stories aren't out there about that, you know, that's the staggering, scary thought, you know. So
yeah.
As difficult of a subject as it might be to discuss, you know, I really think we need to start bringing awareness to the youth, you know. And it's a, you know, very hard subject, especially on this side of the pond.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I mean, our, you know, some of our thoughts in general with sex ed, you know, it's, you'd be shocked. I'll put it to you that way.
Mm-hmm.
You're
unfortunately, nothing shocks me. Mm-hmm. I'm on Twitter quite a lot and I see the attitudes and the judgments and, you know,
mm-hmm.
I know what people are like, but I think it doesn't matter. Whatever resistance we get, we still need to speak out and we need to challenge attitudes. We can't be silenced anymore, and I would encourage the more people that can to find their voice. And
yeah.
I'm hoping that collectively our voices will rise and people will start to listen, and I think people are listening now.
I think if we keep speaking out, you know, the awareness is going to come. You know, you present it to people enough, eventually it does seep its way in, you know, good, bad,
yeah.
or otherwise, you know.
Yeah.
And we're seeing the bad with some of the stuff that happens over here now, and
mm-hmm.
hopefully by us speaking out about it, you know, we're introducing some of the good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's our goal, is to raise the awareness and, you know, get some good flowing back in the world, get some conversation going, and keeping a realistic outlook on things.
So that, you know,
yep.
someday people are able to say, you know, I was raped, I was sexually assaulted. And,
absolutely.
You know, you don't get the stereotypical reaction. You know, we're hoping that, like Joe said, this just the discussion causes people to, you know, forego the stereotypes and
mm-hmm.
just listen. Because
mm-hmm.
that's the most difficult part. So many people are speaking listening just to hear what they're going to say next.
Yeah.
They're not actually
yeah.
listening to the conversation.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and I like the thing that you said that they're doing in Iceland where they're asking the men, did she say yes, versus...
Absolutely.
Versus the victim
shaming. That really
shaming
just
gave,
encouraged me. It really was amazing to
yeah.
see that.
That's
yeah.
great, you know, because it shouldn't be, well,
it's
what
shifting,
were you wearing?
Then, isn't it?
How much did you drink?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All that stuff, you know, all the victim shaming,
yeah.
you know, it's ridiculous. But,
yeah.
well, unfortunately,
we have reached the end of our show.
We have reached the end
oh,
of
wow.
our show. I know, it went by quick, didn't it?
Yeah.
But we are so honored to have had you on our show, Madeline. And
you're very welcome.
Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. Especially all the way from over there.
Yeah, definitely.
In the middle of your afternoon on a Saturday
yeah.
when you could be doing anything on a Saturday.
Anything else.
It's been lovely to speak to you both. Thank you for asking me on.
Thank you so much. And if you want to come back on the show at any time, if something new comes down the pike for you and you want to talk about it, just shoot me a message and we'll get it worked out.
I will do. Okay, that's great.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Yep, and you can pick
you
up
too.
Madeline's book anywhere. It's called Unbroken.
Mm-hmm.
And go out and get it. And, you know, have a great day. Have a great weekend, everybody. And we're going to end with Trevor Page's song, Warrior.
Open your eyes and depths of darkness, as dark as it can be. I will hold you tight and we will rise up with the sun. With my hand in yours, companion, we'll fight until we've won. Can't you see it? The beauty. I'll keep trying to open up your eyes, and I won't concede.
Miss the Mental Health Memoir of the Year, It's Not Your Journey. It's Not Your Journey is the true story of one woman's 20-year battle with mental illness and her recovery from a suicide attempt in 2013. Rebecca Lombardo candidly reveals her real and raw emotions in dealing with depression, bipolar disorder, the loss of her mother and brother, and more. Pick it up today on Amazon.com or visit www.RebeccaLombardo.com for more information.
Join us next week as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness. Follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.